We're on.
Let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, November 9th, 2017. First item of business is to approve tonight's agenda. Do I have a motion for tonight's agenda?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Lucky, second by Commissioner Von Trapp. Any changes or amendments? Seeing none, all those in favor of tonight's agenda say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Agenda's approved. Next item is our roll. Commissioner Lucky.
Here.
Commissioner Ryan.
Here.
Commissioner Miller.
Here.
Commissioner Gildersleeve.
Here.
Commissioner Heller.
Here.
Mr. Von Trapp.
Here.
We are all present and accounted for. Next item of business is the approval of minutes for October 26, 2017. Is there a motion?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
So we have a motion by Commissioner Lucky, second by Commissioner Miller. Any comments, changes, or amendments? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes of October 26, 2017, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Minutes are approved. It is unanimous. Next item of discussion is our Planning Commission deliberation on cottage housing regulations. So thank you again, staff, for the wonderful detailed notes that you're providing of our meeting and our questions. Are there any updates or things you'd like to alert us?
Well, you made a lot of progress last time. I mean, I know it's when you sit through a meeting that long, you go, geez, what did we get done and what do we have? And when I went back and kind of documented what you've done, really did take all the major issues and say, this is what we think we need to do about those. And Mike has jumped in, as he did before so brilliantly, and gotten into the detail, went through, took out the prior comments, only included those that resulted from your last meeting in the current red line. And I think, Mike, we can walk through it, but he's done a real good job in sort of summarizing on the first page of this. Is the issues that we need to relate to tonight in terms of really picking that distance from the downtown that we want to see the zoning, and that's really the major issue left. And Gary was ahead of everything, and he said, bring the road maps, the flood, we want it all, we're gonna do this tonight. And I said, no, let's wrap up this cottage thing and get it behind us and make sure we're all good with what we're sending forward. And then we will bring all of the exhibits that you need when we're dealing with residual zoning that will change in the future, and bring the kind of resources you need and some analysis for you so that when we get into that, we can discuss it. So I'm going to let Mike jump into this because he's really
Dave,
kind of picking
if I
it
may,
up.
So yeah. What I was thinking is that's the where we have our existing cottage zone, what we would need to thoughtfully rezone it. And I wanted to look at everything from our neighborhood maps to understand where we block together certain things, to our flood map where we have sensitive areas, and then, you know, whatever else we might need to make a decision about how that land is best used. So anyway, I guess.
Before you get into that, is this draft notes official or is it just discussion?
No, if there are things that you think are inaccurate, that's a part of the minutes.
There's,
so if you'd like.
There's only one item that I thought that was substantial. That was the title of 2,200 square feet.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right.
The good catch.
The first paragraph.
Yeah, it has a one in front of it there.
It's supposed to be 22 and not 1,200?
1,200. I'm sorry, 1,200. Yeah, it should be.
Oh, yeah. It's
a big size. That was the only thing that measures.
Okay. Well, we'll make sure that I get Mike to proof it because he, not only can I not type well, sometimes I don't spell too well either. So.
I guess okay. Going on the cottage zone, on my memory, what the area we have zoned right now was that we didn't like the map that showed kind of potential.
Exactly.
We didn't agree that we would get rid of the zone entirely.
Well, no. What we did agree, though, is what you did agree is that you didn't like this walking distance, but you thought there should be something that would relate to the distance of cottages from the downtown.
Mm-hmm, like your radius.
And that's what I've got up here. I wanted to walk that through with you guys to talk about that.
And
you guys
from my perspective, it's not that we're taking away the zone. We're not. It's more like here are the cottage housing that fit in all these zones, and here's how you can use it. Does that make sense? So it's not blocks of land, that's a zone, but it is something you can do in all the zones, and here's the ways in which you can do it.
Yeah, I think that's what Jim has mentioned before.
Yeah.
That would be getting rid of that long block right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We didn't find that you had total consensus. There were differences of opinion. So we thought maybe a good way to tackle that is to say, if you think that the cottage zoning is reasonable, if just as a premise that you think it's reasonable to have somewhere, where would you want it? And if you don't think it's reasonable, then let's talk about how we determine where it goes. So one way to do that, there was a lot of discussion about not liking the walking distance because different people walk at different speeds, and it just didn't seem to work. So what we tried to do is to take the center right down the street from QFC, right here, what's it, Ballarat and North Fenway, and go out your quarter, your half, and your mile, and just show you what it is. And because there is a lot of discussion about certain things are important near the downtown and they aren't appropriate further away. So we thought at least there were some things that you all agreed on in terms of where it might be best located. So we thought if we could just start working with the distance metric. And the other thing that we saw that really my attention that really made me think about it differently is when you take the size of these, and he actually has some acreages here, and looking at how many units would fit in those, they look like they're bigger than they are. Because when you start laying the units out in them, there's very few places where you can get 12 of them together in a cluster. So I thought, well, if you're going to zone for it, let's know, A, what's on the ground there now, and B, if you did lay it out, would it fit? Right? So we can just have you go ahead in the discussion. Mike, do you have other things you'd like?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know about what's on the map here, first of all. So you'd asked for those radii from the intersection. So that's what's shown in the dark circles. The red one is what Lynn had prepared earlier in the exhibit that was in the earlier draft of the regulations, which wasn't based on an intersection, but based on a quarter mile distance from the downtown commercial zone. So two alternatives to look at for that radii. The other thing that you'll see, and you might not be able to see it from back there, is I put little stars on certain properties. And where I put those stars was where, considering the factors of the site, including its size, the presence of critical areas, floodplains, the presence of existing development, things like that, what was the likelihood or suitability for a cottage development on the property. So the ones with the stars are the most suitable and most likely to see some kind of cottage development as an alternative. And so that gives you a better sense also of how much are you looking at. If you're just doing a half-mile radius, you're hardly going to see any potential for cottage development. Going out 3/4 of a mile, you pick up a lot more. Going out to 1 mile, you pick up a few more, but not really that many more, and then you're getting pretty far from that central point in the downtown that you were looking at. So I guess from my personal perspective, the 3/4 mile radius was the one that most that kind of met the most benefit and would likely see some cottage actually occur within that zone.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. If anybody wants to come up.
Part of our role is to plan for the future, not for the past. Isn't it possible that we might be having more than one central downtown in the next 20 years? And shouldn't we be planning for that new central downtown?
I think the neighborhood business or the EP1 zones could have some commercial activity, but you know, from knowing what strip malls are, I don't know what would go in. It would be a supermarket, if anything, and whatever stores would accompany that, or there would be a mixed-use building is the way I see it. But I don't know if there could be another. Well, you know, you always have your historic downtown, so you could have an alternative to it. I don't know that our population will ever get big enough to support it, because you have sewer capacity, you have water capacity, and you also have land use constraints.
Sir, but I'm just wondering, our buildings are all going to have the east end of town. The residential community is going to explode out there. We know that. Yeah, they're going to be all driving. Like Lemmings down Cedar Falls Road and North Bend Boulevard. They're not going to like that much, and they're going to eventually, marketing will show up where they live, and that's going to work. We have some growth patterns there that we might be able to not reverse if we don't plan for it. And if that's possible, we might be thinking about putting smaller type units zoned for what it could be a future downtown area, which might be around 432nd or somewhere in that area, which would open up the options that Mike is saying. There's not much opportunity.
I think
for a lot of clustering of small units in the historical town.
I think I like your discussion. I don't know. I think in the area that I would consider it to be is outside any of the zones. I guess so. I think it's a good land use discussion, but maybe it's not going to be so applicable, if I'm understanding you correct. Because I'm just thinking within this area, and not bringing it further out.
So that what the current regulations also show is, and this as I understand based on your prior discussion, outside of that radius, you still wanted to see cottages allowed on a limited basis through a conditional use permit. So the conditional use permit evaluates the impact specific to that proposal rather than just a fully permitted use.
You're not eliminating the opportunity, it's just processed differently. And there was a lot of controversy around zone or no zone, so we wanted to at least bring that up as, you know, do you limit it more and then allow the CUP elsewhere, or do you want a zone, or, you know, just to finalize that whole discussion. This is critical, because if you were to remove it, wherever you remove it, you're opening it up to a rezone and a discussion about it.
I like what you're talking about with the conditional use permit, because what Jim has described is you have a development of houses and you're building 40 houses, and then you have this other area that's a little bit harder to build the traditional lots on, and you could apply the cottages to that area and build a cluster of cottages there, mm-hmm. which provides a mixed use of housing. And
it started to make a lot of sense when you look at how small some of these parcels are in the mm-hmm. orange area. I mean, you may have the right location from the developer's standpoint of looking at the land, and it may not be here, and we want to have an opportunity to do it. And I think I heard the commission saying we'd like this to be a little bit more like what the model in Kirkland was, and build the open space and have a sense of community and build something unique rather than just a housing type that's a little bit smaller than a regular single-family home. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what we're getting now.
Well, what's in the cottage zone now are bigger lots, so you'd have room to put in the cottages like we're describing. Trying to cram them into some of those little lots, you'd have to buy a bunch of lots and demo a bunch of houses.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see that as...
it's as a longer term.
More expensive.
Or you just have, you know, like we've got on 3rd Street now. You have a 3 or 4 or whatever they can fit into the area.
You could do the smaller ones, but
yeah.
to me that's not the...
it's not creating the community.
Yeah, that's a small group of cottages. But, I mean, to me, that's... I don't know. It's not the cottage zone. I don't know what you call it. The cluster, I guess, to me, if it's less than 12, it's just a group of homes in close proximity. I don't know. That's mm-hmm. the whole point of it is to have the 12, to me. I know we have flexibility, and that's fine. But, you know, so to me, that I like the 3/4. And to me, that's where you'd probably be the lower infill. The reason to have the zone is to have those larger blocks where it's 12 or 2 12s. And if we just have it scattered throughout the city, I just don't know if you're going to get that. And I think if we're just patient and, you know, wait a little while and see what comes in, because there's a moratorium right now, so there's nothing going on. But if we just go ahead and remove the zone and say wherever you want, and then we don't give any time to see if developers, you know, that's what I would suggest. Pick the 3/4 and then leave the cottage zone as it is, put these regs in, and then wait a little while and see if someone builds it out. There's people that are skeptical and say it won't happen, it won't work, the price won't match. But, you know, if we don't give it time, then we'll never know. So
I like what you had to say.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I think I might have ruffled feathers when I was kind of excited a couple meetings ago, because when I pointed out that we designed and kind of developed the language around the zone, and then we came with the council, he came back and just somebody took a paintbrush and on some random land. And that's the beef. It's still that way. But to your point, I think it's a great plan. You're kind of reserving it for the market to come to that. Meanwhile, we've allowed it pretty much anywhere else in town, somebody wants to do it. And I'm trying to come up with how I would describe to someone else the function of this three-quarter mile. What benefit are we doing by delineating the space? Are we changing anything? Or are we just saying, hey, it'd be nice to do it in here? Because I think the code would allow them to do it in there, whether we put a circle around it or not.
Well, the circle is where it's fully allowed. Outside of that circle, it's either not allowed or you allow it only through a conditional use permit process, which involves a higher level of
review. Yeah, so we're exiting out the conditional use requirement.
Yeah.
Inside the
outside,
whatever.
Yeah. And you know, there's some options here, you know, and that's why we like to leave it when we bring it to you. If the wish was to, or the thought was, we have too much orange and we need to reduce it, we thought that those radii might give you some idea about where you'd want to keep it and where you would want to let it go if you did that. Now, if you decide, well, we kind of like to leave those, the importance, I think, of the radius is if you're trying to get people near services and you're trying to make some kind of a statement of policy that way, at least you're saying we're really encouraging them in this area. And let's say you took the option of a mile or three-quarter mile, and you said, let's leave the zoning there, let's allow it by CUP elsewhere. We didn't know which direction you were going. It might have been a choice you'd taken. So you have a lot of options here. You can use the radius if you find that it isn't useful. Don't use it. You can maintain the orange area, or you could reduce it. We wanted to say, as far as the regulations as to what has to go on when cottage development occurs, you've really nailed that. It's all in here. We'll go through it. You've done a really good job with it. The proximity is the question now, and where you want to allow them and under what regulations. And there are different ways of doing it.
I don't want to speak too soon, but I feel like I'm really close to coming up with something we can all raise our hand to or not. The summary point I'm thinking about is three-quarters of a mile from what we call city center, probably about perfect, because my grandmother could probably walk three-quarters of a mile to meet me at the coffee shop, right? And the fact that somebody could, through a conditional use permit, come to us and say, hey, you know, this is kind of a funky, weird shape. It's outside the three-quarter mile buffer or line, and I'd like to get this done because it makes sense to the developer. That option is still sitting there, which is great. And then we've also, or rather the council has, blocked off a pretty big chunk of dirt that's going to be preserved for the foreseeable future. Foreseeable is a catchphrase. So I think those three things together work really well to incentivize developers to build this product, to have them be able to adapt to the market, whatever it is, by the time they can actually start pulling permits. And down the road, we protected the space that's left close to town outside the three-quarter mile for something other than what it used to be zoned for. So the only question I have has to do with the max square footage. And the last meeting, I think we had a 1,200 or 1,500 foot conversation. I happen to lean toward the larger max than, in other words, 1,500 versus 1,200, only because that's generally the difference between a one bedroom in a loft or a two bedroom, three bedroom kind of feel in house, because that extra couple hundred square feet is a bedroom. I'm ready to vote on something that sounds like what I just said, if we get there.
Okay. Anybody else thoughts on the radius?
It's really coming, I think, to the same place everybody else is, but maybe from a different point of view. And I hate to call on Issaquah all the time, because there are times I feel like I'm beating up on them. But what we're doing with this, by using the radius, I kind of want to have that still as part of this piece. We're saying that we really want to focus that redevelopment, the density in that area, instead of what we saw in Issaquah, which is they sprawled out and out and out and out and out and out everywhere, and now just now they're looking at more density. So I see it as part of trying to preserve the outer edges of the city to less density and less degree of development, which we're hearing from everyone is what they want to see. But marking it so it's like, hey, it's easy for you to come in and do cottage in this area. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it easy. We're not going to tell you, no, you can't do it anywhere else. We do have a way that you can do that. But it says that this is where we really want you to do it, and it fits the goal of getting more density down there, a greater range of housing sizes, maybe redevelopment of some of those older homes.
And I think to tag onto that, I mean, if you look, I mean, just since I've been here, you guys have spent a couple of $1 million in the downtown area. And it's going to have some payback. It always does when you put that kind of infrastructure in. And so, you know, and there are some other ideas we have about trying to incentivize people to fix their buildings up. And we have no fewer than, what, three or four really significant commercial developments being proposed within the red area right now that will add new places to eat, new places to recreate. And so there's a really strong theme behind what you're saying, and that is that if you can continue to invest and enliven that area, and part of that, you're absolutely right, Nick, is to get the wallets near it, because that's where what everybody looks at. Am I going to survive here if I locate here? But we're making a lot of investment in the downtown, and we're looking at some very good design projects that will come in and make it look better as they get built. And we've had some real serious discussions about maybe looking at a form-based code thing down North Bend Way, so we start to look at what we want it to look like when it's built. Getting away from not getting so hung up on uses and getting more into what do we want our community to look like, and how do we make it walkable, and how do we make it a magnet for people, not just to come in and buy gas and get groceries and go down the road, but to come in and be a part of the community for a while. And, you know, I've only been here 3 months, and you've had three amazing events. You had the park event with the music and the food. You had the Blues Walk, which is killer for a town of this size. And then this trick-or-treat thing. I mean, Bree in our office just came up with a crazy idea. We had 500 people. I mean, it was every store contributed. I mean, you had a sense of community that you just don't find anymore. And so it's a gem, and it has a lot of value. And if we invest in it right, and if we get people near it, I think it's going to get better and better. So,
welcome to North Bend.
Yeah. Well, I love it. We worked really hard in Folsom. We had a beautiful, we invested $40 million in our gold rush. We did part of town. We did everything. We built parking garage. We had a turnstile you could move with your hand that the trains could go on. We had an amphitheater downtown. We had light rail into town. We did everybody's facade for free with redevelopment money. And you've got some great bones here that is going to turn out really good when you get it done. And it's just that vision and that commitment that's going to make it happen. And this is part of it, you know, is to get the right kind of housing there.
Well, thank you, David. Curtis or Mary, any thoughts?
The one thing I was going to touch on, and having not been here, you know, pursuing this last few meetings. But one thing I haven't heard tonight that I feel like we have the fortune. We've been talking about the cottage. You've been talking about the cottage long before I was ever here. But we've been talking about it for years. And finally, we actually have some cottages that we can look at and kind of evaluate. And one of the things that stands out for me is the, I guess, number E on page 7 is... second floor not be allowed to exceed 50% of the floor area of the first floor. And now that we have an example of what that looks like when it's not with that, I feel very much the need to propose this to get, I think, what you've been talking about, at least what I've understood you've talked about for a while, and kind of the vision that we have for this. So from my reading here, it looks like there wasn't a consensus. Hopefully, that's the point we touch on tonight.
Mike, I'm just curious. I know it's a little bit hypothetical, but I'm just trying to, again, the 3/4 mile radius versus other parts. What would you suggest is the cost both in time and permitting cost to get a conditional use permit to do something outside the 3/4 area?
It is a bigger expense when you're doing a conditional use permit because it goes through a hearing examiner. So you're paying for that hearing examiner's time. You're paying for a staff report to be prepared, which would, well, actually it would still have to be prepared for it because it's still a subdivision. So in that sense, if both are subdivisions of some sort, either a short plat or a subdivision, there's still the process going into it. And if it's more than 9 units, it still has to go to a hearing examiner for approval of the subdivision. Under 9, you can go through a short plat, which is administrative. So it's just adding a little bit of additional process to consider impacts to adjacent properties in that case.
The reason it's appropriate, though, I think, is you're going to get the larger ones through a CUP. So you're going to get a master plan small community.
Right.
And that is where the thought and the design and the effort, the thoughtfulness needs to go into it. And you're going to be impacting single-family neighborhoods because it's not in its own zone. So it may be a little bit more processing. I've always looked at that kind of thing this way, and I was a developer for quite a while. If I know what the rules are and I know where I can do it, I can get to my end target quicker. And so if I know, if I have some certainty through this use permit process, and we have a really good pre-application process where you get all your answers, you get all your money, everything you're going to spend money on, you know what you're going to have to do, you know what your stormwater requirements are, your traffic improvements. So by the time you get through the pre-app process, you either apply and go forward or say, good feasibility money, doesn't work, I'm out of here. So I think the clearer we are, this is one of the things that bothered me when I came in here and saw the moratoria, is you're not telling people we know who we are and this is what we want. You're telling people we don't quite know what we're going to do here, and so we're not going to let you do it. And it really sends the wrong message. You're going to get some kind of growth here, and you want it well planned, and you want to be in charge of how it happens rather than just have the pressure and then through that kind of politics, you get what you get, and usually not many people are happy. So a CUP is a little more thoughtful, but it's a whole planned community, so it's probably a better tool to use to do it. And it, I think it would be a real shame if we didn't get any of the common space surrounded and the kinds of things that you've toured and really like just because we'd get bits and pieces here and there. So,
well, the root of my question was more about I'm a developer, I've got a timeline, I've got money backing, I've got whatever I've got lined up, and I've got a place within the 3/4 mile radius, mm-hmm. and I've got another place that's outside of that.
Really, it's not going to make that much difference as long as you're doing more than 9 units. It's going to be largely the same process because they're both going to the hearing examiner, and if you're outside that radius, you're just considering an additional process that considers impacts. And
so then to further the point of adding value to this 3/4 mile radius, is there a way to help the developer through that process without the hearing examiner, without some of the steps that might otherwise be required?
You have to do a hearing examiner for any subdivision. So if you're over 9 units, no matter where you are on that map, you're still going through a hearing examiner for approval of the preliminary plat.
So it doesn't put you at any competitive disadvantage with any other subdivision?
I'm just thinking more about incentive.
Yeah.
You know,
here's
looking for ways.
Here's the thing on incentives. We've cut our impact fees way back, and the thing that bothered me is they were getting bigger and bigger with the cottages. And pretty soon, if you look at the real impacts of the unit, it wasn't different. And they were putting the moniker on it so they could save money, and that was it. Well, that misses where we're going, folks. That's not what we wanted to do. We didn't want to put the financial burden on the other developers and not get the quality cottage development. And in fact, that's what we got. So part of the reason we have a moratorium when we brought it back to you is that both you and the council and members of the community said, this cottage thing isn't all it was cracked up to be. How do we make it that? So that's why we kind of revisited it. And I kind of keep my eye on that and say, how do we get that product? How do we get what people really want? And size was a factor in that.
Sure. Well, they always wanted to build big.
Mary, did you?
Yes, it was interesting. I have a specific question about Tollgate Farm. And this is maybe for people who are listening in, but maybe for all of us to update. What is the story behind that? I know it's a protected area, but is there a time frame when it will come up again to be researched and talked about? Tollgate Farm is
for the future uses of Tollgate Farm?
Yeah.
So that, the Sideview Metropolitan Park District has recently been working on a agricultural feasibility study to look at what kind of urban agricultural uses are suitable for the property.
Okay.
Right now it's being leased by Ron Crouch. At some point, when Ron is no longer able to operate the property, we need to think about future user.
Okay.
And so that's the genesis of that effort. And there are some recommendations that have come out of that that the Sideview MPD is looking at right now.
Okay.
Small-scale urban park related agricultural uses.
Yeah. I look at that every day currently where I live. And the river kind of really is very close by. It's beautiful, and I would love to see, personally, I would love to see that maintained, but also sits into that three-quarter area, which makes sense to me, ultimately.
So cottages would not be allowed there, though.
Okay.
The cottages would only be allowed in the low-density residential zone in that radius and in the downtown commercial zone.
That gives me clarity. Thank you for that. Appreciate it.
And an HDR, but that wouldn't be enough.
Or not HDR.
Not HDR.
Just the cottage residential, downtown commercial, and low density residential.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can we talk a little bit about the square footage issue?
Is anybody not okay with three-quarter mile?
So okay. Three-quarter mile, and
okay.
Outside of that, allowed
conditional.
With conditional use permit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, that begs the question, do you leave the orange as it is, or do you limit it within the three quarter? Just want to clarify where we're going here.
Leave as is for another meeting.
Okay. So they're going to get three quarter mile plus the orange for the layperson?
At this point.
Right.
Yeah, if that's the consensus.
Yep.
Okay.
We won't be revisiting zones in a future meeting.
Well, when this goes to CED committee and goes up to, there'll be a work session with the council, and they're going to have the benefit of all the discussion you had. We're going to give that to them. So we're going to say that there was quite a bit of discussion about where the zoning should occur and how much should, and the consensus is leave it for now and see what the market does. But there was some concern that, if you got it, the dispersal may be, in some cases, a good thing because A, you're going to get some smaller units in the downtown on the infill lots, and that's a good thing. And B, if somebody finds a site, the showstoppers aren't necessarily zoning and CUP and that kind of thing. It's high groundwater table. What does it cost to do the flood control and the stormwater stuff? I mean, those are really big issues. So traffic impact fees, things like that. So those are things that really cause people to raise their eyebrows or ask us why, why do you have this? So those are the things that would really impact us. And if you go out away from this radius, I think you're going to have a decreased interest. And the only thing I think you're going to see is when somebody wants to come in and do an all cottage development, and they just have a concept for a given piece of dirt.
But we've also limited that in here, too, so you have to do low density with your cottage. You can only do so many.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of protected in that sense anyway. But, yeah, for another discussion another day.
Mm-hmm.
You'd like to move to square footage.
Yeah, I just remember that was when I left the last couple times, that was the one thing that kind of, and it was specifically between 1,200 and 1,500 as a cap for the product. And the builders that have built what we call cottage, we're up in the 2,500 square foot range currently, right? Some of that stuff is in the
cottage zone?
What has been built under the definition of cottage?
No, 1,700 square feet is the max. You can go beyond that if you're doing extra small in addition to that. But for the
why do I have in my head that one of the John Day processes like 2,200, 2,300 square feet? Where is that?
I think there's maybe one in the polygon that exceeded it because they did a small one as well.
Okay. So it's right now it's 1,700?
1,700 is the max.
And we're discussing 1,200 and 1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically saying 12. That's what I think we left with.
On page 14 of our packet, It's 18.11.050B, max structure size. Minimum of 75% of the unit shall be 1,200 square feet or less. 25% of the units shall be 1,500 square feet or less.
Is that what you're thinking, Jim?
Yeah, so that's the way it was written prior to our conversations. And I think we...
That's the way it was written after our conversations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that's fine to me.
I mean, I was the one who I think wanted just to keep it at 12, but just because the group thought a little bit larger, we said, all right, but just a certain number.
Okay.
Yeah, you're
so if that's clear for everybody, that's...
Again, all of the research we did, a lot of them were right in there. A lot of them were at 12. I don't remember many going over 15. There might have been one or two, but it was predominantly 12 to 15. And the thing, you know, I maybe tongue-in-cheek, but I told Rob several times, I said, you know, you did a good deal by being able to bounce it up and pay the lower fees, but I don't think that's consistent with what we want. Yeah. And he would, when he got the original copy of this, he was, you know, before we came to you last time, he was wondering, well, what's the objective here? And he was trying to change the objective and the focus to the larger footage. And I said, you're getting it really good, Rob. You know exactly where we're coming from. And we're just not on board with you, you know, because he did want it to go above 17. He didn't want to see larger footage.
That's why I came here.
Yep. So, Mike, on page 15, you have a comment there. And based on what we're thinking right now, I guess that would stay.
You mean on C there?
Yes.
Well,
no,
you've
A2. A2.
A2,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah, the idea of that is if you're shrinking down the cottage zone, which you'll talk about at your next meeting, this may not be necessary because you, in that case, you wouldn't have as much cottage and you wouldn't necessarily want to fill up a single family.
Yeah.
Just,
I think if we're going to talk about the zoning, it'll take a while, plus then messaging out the property owners.
Right.
Right?
So yeah, that will take some time.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense to leave it because it could be a month or two.
Yeah, this came up because we had...
Thanksgiving and Christmas, too.
Yeah, we had people that had very low density, and they perceived that cottage could be located next to them. They just thought the buffer had to be significant. And we do have quite a mix, so it's kind of hard. You have to relate to each neighborhood type.
But I'm correct in my understanding, right? Since we're not
eliminating... So if you're not eliminating, this can stay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is going back to the radius thing, but I just thought of it. Maybe came up with a comment before, but as far as the radius, is it, or I don't know if there's language in here, as far as if the line touches a parcel?
I actually do, I was going to add that here. I wrote it in as a note to talk to you guys about. What I'm suggesting is within low density residential zone radius, a minimum of 75% of the property shall be within the radius to allow for cottage development, except as authorized under section D below, which is the where you're talking about conditional use permit. So that 75%, that's totally just a number that I picked, if that's the appropriate or if you feel it should be entirely within.
Or just if it touches at all. Because I'm just wondering how you would actually measure that 75%. If someone didn't really want it, you're going to get an argument and get out your, I don't know, your own compasses and draw them out.
So you're happy if it was just if a portion of your property lies within, you can?
Well, I'm just thinking how to administrate it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would probably add a little more if we said if it's touching, but I'm just posing a question, I guess, to people.
Anybody?
How about greater than 50%?
That would be fairly easy to look at.
Depends how big of a line you're going to draw.
There's a large chunk of land that's yet to be in the city. That's also 3/4 of a mile from the city center, based on that circle. Mm-hmm. So in theory, you're touching, we don't even know what it is yet, right?
The white area?
Yep.
Yeah.
but it's fairly good-sized chunks of dirt.
This is.
So if we go 50%.
I think 50% is a good criteria because it's easy to evaluate. There's not going to be a question.
Right. Like, what is half?
Well, you don't want to provide a lot of exceptions for people that say, well, I should have an exception because I have
the final version of this map is going to be done in GIS, so you'll be able to zoom in on a property to see more clearly where is that line precisely on the property.
It allows you to measure it, too.
That would do it for sure.
One of the important pieces is some of those white areas that you're seeing that fall in there are not within the UGA.
So those are not at all subject to our regulation.
So that's not even going to be an issue for us.
But that's going to change, what, 3 years from now? When's the next?
I haven't heard of anything about the urban growth boundaries changing.
Do we need to just say that in our definition of the radius that it lies within the city is within these three zones, or then can apply?
Everything we do is within the city, right?
Yeah. Well,
I'm just talking for the person who gets the urban growth boundary, and then they say, I can do this density, and we say, no, it's actually 2 units per acre.
Yep.
And so then you have that disagreement.
Mm-hmm. I think that sometimes, too, that particularly I'm thinking about the area that's on the other side of Silver Creek, heading toward Three Forks and Circle River Ranch. If they saw a map like this with us putting part of their property in this, they would lose their minds that we were trying to develop there. I actually get that question from people frequently. Wait a minute.
Well, one way to do this, if you're showing this as a diagram, you could shade it lightly outside of the city and have it dark in. Mm-hmm. That's just a graphic thing.
And it's more just to make it very explicit that, this is a circle, but it's only mm-hmm. the things that are in the city
right.
that mm-hmm. are affected.
Yeah, I mean, if it's in GIS, I'm fine with the 3/4 as you mm-hmm. suggested. I mean, that's a mathematical way to show.
3/4 or 50%?
So, I think 50% might be even easier, actually.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Then whatever's easier.
Can I ask a question?
Okay. So
a couple of just, I'm trying to see what this area actually is in use. So mm-hmm. first of all, the river here, do we have any sewer crossing the river?
No. Mm-hmm.
So that's this area. Right, I realize none of this isn't working anyway.
Well, it's only in the yellow again.
Yeah, yeah.
So
just what I'm saying is the circle we're talking about, there's not a lot in there.
There's not, no.
Right?
When you consider that.
And this is a half mile.
Yeah, it's half.
This is 3/4.
Yeah, 3/4.
And so really we're only talking about from here around to here.
Well, it would cross the river eventually at some point, presumably. There will be, well, there is sewer across the river near Safeway. So it could extend into the low-density residential behind Safeway.
And then what about in this direction?
So there's not sewer yet, but again, at some point, sewer would be extended.
Yeah. Well, so here's the thought I'm having.
In your mapping, you could have those circle segments where there's no sewer dotted lines rather than solid to make the distinction. Solid lines have sewers.
Well, sewer changes over time, so you have to have sewer in order to do any kind of subdivision. So that's not.
Mary's thinking that this piece of land is going to be developed as a circle line, and when she explained it, she said, "Fine." I'm just saying for the general population, if the circle segment is a dotted line, it's just to complete the circle, but it's not part of the zone. Not well said, but I think David gets my idea.
No, I think that's different than what we're saying. It's pretty much within that radius is where you can do cottage if it meets the cottage criteria in the definition.
Except if it's not in the city itself, that circle line that's outside the city, take it out of there.
That doesn't mean anything. Well, that's the very, very initial inquiry question that, are you in the city? If you're not in the city, we're not going to go any further with anything.
Right.
We'll be able to answer people's questions about prospective development at the very start.
The piece I'm going back and forth on in my mind, you may recall that there was a point in time when I said I wanted downtown commercial to be the whole swath, mm-hmm. right? Because I figured, let them go, be free. Do what you want to do. You're not going to build commercial right next to something else that makes more sense. The market's going to figure that out. But I'm thinking this through in the cottage product I have in my mind, and at the stage we're in where we're going to probably revisit something like this in the next 10 years, certainly, maybe a better way to go is instead of 3/4, it's half.
The one challenge with the half is it doesn't really leave you much for potential cottage development because everything's pretty well built out. There's just like 3 or 4 stars within that area. And each one of those is only if they want to do cottage. So it's not, you know, exclusively cottage. It could just very well.
Unless you have some assemblage happening, right?
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Because the farther out away from the city center you go, and I like I said, grandma 3/4 mile, like that can be done. But if you continue that thought process, you're going away from small, high-density, walkable, to use that term. The farther away you go in each increment, you're going more towards larger demand for bigger houses, less demand for smaller houses. That's a walkable circumstance. So there's a part of me that's thinking if we're trying to strategize around time and plan growth, it leads me to say that a smaller distance, or a lower distance, shorter distance from the city core would help this product get started where people actually use it because they're walking into town. And it would force a little bit of the economics to say, you know, I can't really do it another half mile away. I'm going to come in here. I'm going to spend the money to bring 3 lots together. And, you know, that's going to be the new cottage development versus appreciating your stars, Mike, where it's okay, it's easy because there's nothing there. But that's also where the bigger house development might go right now. And so I'm struggling with
what you're really going to get, though, is you're going to get the 2 and 5 unit, like we're getting now in the downtown, in the smaller radius area. And then in the larger area, you're going to get people that come in and they don't want to go through the hassle of aggregating. And they've got, if it works for single family, they'll do single family. But if they have a concept, and they are within, say, the 3/4 mile, it still is fairly reasonable and fairly walkable. If you see, there's a lot of people biking too, and we're really pushing as many bike lanes as we can with the new street cross sections, so you can see people, you know, biking in as well, and it gives you a little bit more mobility. But a lot of these are just kind of fine-tuning because, as you say, the market's going to determine where they're going to go. And you're going to either get the smaller, you know, like I say, 3 to 5, or you're going to get a couple of bigger ones where they're going to have the property for it. And they're going to have reasonable access to sewer availability, or they're not going to extend it a long ways to do it.
It would just be a bummer, sorry, except for where the park is, right? I can see that being a great target for this. It would just be a bummer to me if our first 5 years of this cottage creation that we have, that it's being done outside the area where people comfortably could walk into shops and things in the city. That's the thing I'm struggling with.
So the other red line, which is the squiggly one, is the 1/4 mile from the downtown zone, downtown commercial zone. And so it is not as broad sweeping as everybody's talking about. Is that something that you want to consider, rather than just the radius line?
The disadvantage that I thought about in considering that one is that that then kind of locks in a prescribed area from the downtown commercial zone. Because the downtown commercial zone could change,
right,
subject to rezones. So there could be unforeseen consequences of that changing where the cottage boundary is, or the cottage boundary becomes inconsistent with the downtown commercial zone.
I mean, I initially thought a half mile, so I, just after what Mike had said, though, I'm looking at what would be possible. That's why I kind of switched during the meeting to 3/4. So, I mean, I'd be fine with a half mile as well, just to keep it right there. But after Mike said there's not much could actually be done, then that's why I kind of switched to 3/4. So,
yeah.
I mean,
it's difficult. It's true that if there's nothing on the land, it's going to draw easier whatever somebody
Those aren't all vacant. Those are just the larger properties that you could put a couple things on.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Does that, I'm thinking again now, so this three-quarter mile distance, we're going to have this cottage zone overlay, if you will. Not really that, but is that going to preclude somebody on these larger starred lots that you have from putting up two single-family homes versus 12 cottages?
No, they still could do two single-family homes. And that's probably what's more likely to happen, because that's just the convention.
Sure, yep.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to add, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it. But then, I look at actual potential, and for me, that threshold is three-quarters.
I'm not stepping up and down on that. I think it just kind of occurred to me.
Well, in looking at the stars and, the size of the lots, and I understand what you're saying, Mike, which, by the way, thank you for going through all of that. That was a tremendous amount of work, it seemed like. It just helps me understand, here's the potential for this to happen. I mean, that is it called aggregating?
Consolidating? Yeah, yeah, it works both ways. Bringing lots together.
I mean, that sounds like a great idea in theory. What is the reality of that, though? I mean, three abutting landowners are suddenly going to become willing. Yeah, if the price is right.
It starts with your uncle who bought one lot in 1972 and another lot in 1983, and all of a sudden he's got 10 acres contiguous. That's how it happens.
Yeah, and it does happen. I'm just wondering, we really want to see this go, right? I mean, this has kind of been a conceptual thought for a long time. The market certainly, obviously we're seeing it, so let's not restrict it. Too much.
Cool.
Okay.
Back to three quarters.
Yeah,
quarters.
And 50% within.
What loose ends are there, Mr. Chair?
So I do have a number of questions through some of these amendments that I wanted to talk to you guys about.
Yeah, I'm reading on number 17, page 17.
Before we go there, if we can just keep in page order,
yep.
I've got a question for you guys on 16.
Okay.
So at your last meeting, you had suggested a 25-foot setback, and you also said type 2 landscaping. You hadn't prescribed what the size of that landscape buffer would be. 25 feet, from my perspective, is excessive for a landscape buffer. That's a heavy industrial landscape buffer. That's where you don't want to see anything there. This is a residential to residential use.
The problem with making it thinner like that, and I want to see a cedar or Douglas fir tree, I think of the branches. And if you have too dense of an area, then the tree grows into the building, or you're going to have a highway for squirrels.
Or people want to take them down.
So let me keep going with it, though. So this still prescribes a 25-foot building setback. But it only prescribes, in my suggested language here, a 10-foot type 2 landscape buffer. So outside of that area is still your backyard and your uses. It's just not a buffer. So in our code, a landscape buffer is a densely planted screen. It's not just backyard.
I think what we heard from some of the residents who were in existing LDR that this could occur by, right? And so that was to offset, that what they considered to be something that they didn't want to see?
Well, eventually these trees get pruned. You're not going to keep limbs growing down. Because of your firewise program, you're going to be limbing up your trees significantly. And so you're not going to have that screen that you're talking about eventually.
You'll still have landscaping within that area. It'll just be more of a conventional yard rather than a
buffer and that kind of thing.
Right. So you're saying scratch the requirement for the buffer.
I'm saying keep a buffer, but it doesn't need to be a full 25 feet. You can have a 10-foot buffer. The remainder is just yard space that you landscape as a yard.
And the way we had written it, it's a 25-foot setback. Fill it all with buffer, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, probably a mistake. I don't think we meant to do
which
that.
Which would probably kill a project.
Yeah, sure.
Substantial amount of land.
Scott, any thoughts?
I think that the setback is most important. I originally had it as less. I think going to 25 sounds great. So as far as the planting, I mean, I don't know if that matters as much. I mean, people could put in plantings, couldn't they? Maybe some in the backyard, so they could.
What this would allow also is, if it's not a buffer, you could have, like, your driveway, some of your parking within that, outside of the buffer itself. So that's presumably not very impactful to a neighbor. You've got your 10-foot buffer for lighting and some noise attenuation.
Yeah, I think it came directly from folks who have a very low-density, single-family lifestyle. It's been that way for a long time, and now we're opening up the opportunity for people to come much closer to their property with a much more dense product. And people saw that. They see it immediately. So we had a number of members of the public that said, if you come close to a low-density project like mine, I'm going to scream because I want to have that distance. And you can't blame them. I mean, if we're living personally ourselves in a situation like that, we don't want the cottages on top of us. So I think we need some flexibility in that 25-foot area, but the intent is to create the same atmosphere at their property line that they would have with their other neighbors. And if that can be done in a lesser landscaped area, that's great, but they're losing privacy, and that was their main concern, I think. Is that correct?
So I'm trying to visualize 25 feet from a building that's inside a separate zone. Is that what you're kind of throwing out?
Yeah. So here's your street. You've got rural home A here. Here's their driveway. Then the cottage development moves in next to them, and it builds a bunch of cottages around a common green. And you've still got 25 foot of separation here, and what I'm suggesting is 10 feet of that is your densely planted buffer. The remainder of that, your 15 feet, can be backyard area. If you're having maybe a little loop road that goes back here, you could do that. And
well, you might have alley garages, so they're not on the green, something like that.
But to take the entire 25 feet of area and plant it densely as buffer makes all of that fairly unusable to the residents, and that it's a pretty significant taking of the property.
Yep.
If you're doing that all the way around.
Yep. And again, the setback we're talking about is 25 feet from the lot line.
Yeah, the building still has to be 25 feet from the lot line, so you're not going to hit neighbor right up against neighbor.
I think that's, like you were saying earlier, that's it. That covers a lot of it, because both of those neighbors at that point can plant what they want on their property line.
So if that makes sense, that would be my suggestion.
I like it.
Is that consistent with other...
That's still considerably greater than what you would require for a home in the low-density residential zone next to another home. So you could have a 5-foot setback from a home to the property line, 5-10 on the other side.
That's something I wish to change again.
And I think you'll get less of the negative reaction toward the cottages if, I mean, we've heard a lot about building separation within the development. But I think a bigger issue is if you have a very low-density product in your close. So I think that it's not going to look so bad for the cottages to be closer because they're oriented around a town green, as long as they have a nice space between them and the lesser-dense single-family. And I think it's going to be a lot more accepted in those areas where you're really affecting low-density product.
Any thoughts? Other thoughts?
Is that an administrative change that you're doing there? Is that how
that's works? It's written in there under C. So if you like that, we'll keep it.
The low density, you know, on the left side of the cottage, they also have 25 feet.
No, they only have 5-foot minimum on one side, 10-foot on the other side.
Okay. So that's part of the problem. They're too close to the property line.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the low density residential zone, that's our convention throughout the city. If you're increasing those side setbacks, that's a pretty major change throughout the city.
and with the low density, you'd have one house with three other backyards kind of thing.
I'm just saying that the low density house is the tail is wagging the dog, because his presence is forcing 25-foot setback because of the cottage.
In the low density residential zone, yeah. Yeah. You wouldn't have that same setback in the downtown commercial or the cottage residential zone.
So in pretty much every case, this is going to be cottage comes in against an existing house in low density.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's another setback that I'm curious of, because I think the way you have that drawn there, that one house near the road would be on its side.
Yeah.
And then that would only be 10-foot distance from the road for a setback.
So the setbacks for low density residential would be
20
for cottage,
isn't it?
For cottage.
For cottage.
So cottage, yeah. Yeah, so yeah, they could have they're required to have 20 here. Sorry, my drawings are not right.
So that's the front, no matter what.
20 front, building to building would be 10. 25 to the any other property line.
That's, I guess, just what I would ask people what they think of. Because to me, that's what I mentioned in the last meeting. When you're driving down the road, I mean, that LDR we're talking about affects that landowner. But if they're already set back like they are farther than where that cottage is, you know, they probably have a vegetative buffer there in their front yard, so you couldn't see their house very good. But that cottage would be right up against the road. So, I mean, do we want
20-foot setback is the same as what's the setback for the low density residential zone?
It's just the way you drew it.
But it could be they could have set their house differently. Some have more than 20.
Yes.
So I guess just a setback from the road to me is what people would drive by and look at and say, "Oh, this is really dense," you know. But if it's set back farther, they couldn't even see if it was dense or not. That's just a way that I think that the public could just not even know.
It's an option for a developer to do if they want to preserve a streetscape that they have down the street, and it might be something we would look at anyway in the site plan. But look, you're going to have an open space green in there, and you actually want people to be able to see. This is a small community. This has an open space green, because, I mean, you can say that's 20 feet, but how far are the units that are further back there? I mean, you have a green space, and if you go into any of the cottage developments, all the front yard setbacks and all the single family, all the new ones are all 20 feet.
Actually, they're 10 right now.
Are they 10?
We've changed it to 20, yeah. But we haven't seen the homes.
The single family are all 20, aren't they?
No, the single family homes that have been built to date have been under 10.
Yeah. Well, in most communities, they won't allow that. Most communities, it's a minimum of 20 feet. The reason it is you want to be able to park in your driveway and not block the...
Yeah, we require a 20-foot to the garage, and 10 to the house.
Yeah.
So one idea to throw out there is, like the mistake we made with the 5-foot side setback, but 15 between. I mean, do we want to apply that kind of principle to this instead of a flat when it borders the LDR that it has to be 25 feet? Have it be more based on, you know, maybe it's a minimum of 15, but a 25-foot setback between houses. And I don't know how that's going to...
Between structures, yeah.
Yes. And it would just be kind of adding a gray area to this.
You don't know what's on any one of the sides. So the idea here is you're lessening your impact on low-density residential existing homes. So
I guess... And I get that. At the same time, these dimensions are going to maybe unnecessarily limit it in certain areas or eliminate it. And so adding, maintaining that protection, but having it adjustable to a different size because you have this varying degree that you can work with, you know, that might be great for a certain site.
So do you mean like when it's abutting an existing house versus undeveloped property?
Right. So, yeah, there you would have smaller setback. Or that house, the existing house, is 40 feet off, you know, the property line already because of the size lot. And, you know, and our requirement, as it stands here, is still 25. And so maybe this lot, the potential cottage lot, is now, you know, it's not potential because of our 25 foot. But because this house is 40 feet already, we can give them 15, and now it makes that a possibility.
You're talking about using the distance from the house rather than the property line?
I'm talking about kind of using both. I mean, if this isn't an idea, anybody.
So the only thing I can say would really be a problem for that is if let's say you're the guy who lives on the low-density residential, you're 3,000 feet and you've got land all around you and cottage comes in right in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
If you create a restriction on setbacks of the 25 feet, that means you might not be able to build an ADU in your backyard because now you're going to be closer to the cottage. That kind of, you're bouncing back and forth restricting land use, in my mind. But if you just say this is about cottage, this is just about the cottage lot, 25 feet from a lot line, that's going to be real consistent, and it protects the low density.
So but we do what you're struggling with already in LDR, with the 5 and 15.
Right. Say that again?
But that's also presuming that it's like uses, LDR to LDR. So this is a potentially higher intensity, conceivably higher impact use going into a lower.
I think what people were saying, remember, all these are going to be two-story. Instead of having one two-story home next to you with whatever the setback is, you're going to have a row of them. Could be six, could be five, could be four. And they're basically going to have two-story homes looking right over your fence if you're real close.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we had people in on a discussion that lived in those neighborhoods, said, we don't want that. And so we're thinking, okay, how can we preserve against this low-density product the kind of distance that would make them coexist favorably. And Mike then looks at a little site planning, and there indeed, where are you going to park in this thing anyway? You've got to have some room for that.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to have a front door, front garage, which is, see, this is how this whole cottage thing has deteriorated, because we're having people build standard subdivisions with larger than cottage units and having front garages and everything and no downgrade. And in this case, you've got to accommodate probably with garages in back or parking out back, and then the town green in front. So if you really want the product that they're building over in Kirkland and some of these places, you have to think about the site plan as well as the adjacency so that you get neighborhood acceptance. But it's just going to be a whole different animal. And I think people just didn't want a number of two-story buildings looking over their fence when they're in a very low density.
And I guess when I walked around the Kirkland facility, all I remember was it was tree-lined all the way around it. I didn't see other houses outside. It was like I was at this beautiful place among the woods where there was a group of houses.
All right, just throwing that in.
Yeah.
Does that hit what you're thinking?
Enough.
You were looking for an option that it didn't have to be a hard 25 feet, but how else could we do it? And, I just think.
How do we make it more versatile, right, based on.
I don't think it, areas. Makes any sense in downtown commercial. I only think in LDR when you have an existing home. And maybe we would just say in LDR where there's an existing structure or existing home. So if there isn't.
Yeah, if there's not.
If there's not 15 feet.
Potentially.
Okay.
Yeah. How about that? Does that work? If there's an existing structure, it's 25 feet. If there isn't, then 15 feet.
In an adjacent lot.
In an adjacent lot, yeah.
I'm still a fan of the 25 feet from a lot line if the lot line is cottage shared with LDR. I think less than that, number one, you can't do anything with it. You can't drive through it. It's less than 25 feet. You've got no room to maneuver. And if you're going to plan anything and still have a walkway, you need enough space to make those things work together, right?
You're almost
you're, in another way, you're almost saying we really want the enclosed green space, we really want the cottage site plan, we don't want individual units in a traditional subdivision.
Yep.
That's kind of, I think, where we're going a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of hard, too, to really communicate with the fervor that those people who see this coming in next to their LDR will represent, and I think we heard them loud and clear. And you know, that's why we do this, so that we can hear, we're going to hear it later when we come into a development comes in somebody's neighborhood, so why not plan it right to begin with? So.
And if that's based on, you know, something that came out of a public hearing, then I wasn't here for that, so I didn't hear that. Mm-hmm. That's something I always want to respect.
I'm pretty sure Scott was the champion.
And it was the specific comments were people that were in low density residential across from the current cottage residential zone there.
Okay.
And also for people out of Silver Creek with small one-story homes on large lots, realizing in one case only with an empty lot next door and being concerned. I think she used the word looming. Mm-hmm. She'd have houses looming over her.
Mm-hmm.
So this was addressing some of those concerns of how do we make it so that it doesn't interrupt the feel of the overall neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Now that's going to be an underlying theme here because there's such a mix of densities, so it's unique.
Yeah. So are you what you need?
Well, are you all good with 25 feet? Okay.
Yeah. And what did we end up on the buffer? What was it?
10-foot type 2 buffer.
Yep. Inside that 25 feet.
Yeah.
Got it.
I just need a clarification on the front buffer. So we talked about an example of 20 feet would be from that road. Let's say there was a road going up the right side, so it was a corner lot. Would it be 20 feet to the left as well?
25 feet, yeah. So the 25 feet to the house, but the road can be within that buffer.
Like, well, it'd be or within 20 from the road to that cottage, right? So it's not
right
on the front. Let's say there was a road on the right side going up. It'd be 20 there.
20 as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anywhere there's a road.
And understand that when you measure a setback, you measure it from the right of way line. So you could have well beyond pavement. You know, okay. You usually have another 10, 15 or more.
I was just trying to make sure it wasn't all of a sudden the side because there could be one front or something. But I'm just looking at it from the road and people driving by.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's cool.
Just one nice thing, it's going to be twice as far from the road as some of them that have been built have been, so that's a good thing.
So on K, I wanted to ask you guys about, because there was conversation at the last meeting about whether you wanted the 50% rule on the second floor. K does that a little bit, because this is 25 feet to the peak of the roof. Right now, for comparison, the city's regulations allow 35 feet for a standard single-family home to the midpoint of a peaked roof, so you can go well above 35 feet. So a 25 foot to the peak of the roof is pretty short, so you're naturally limiting to probably 1.5 story. You may be able to get a 2-story in there depending on the design of the home. But.
So the existing cottages were not built. The standard wasn't in there when they were
built. No, it's higher than that.
Okay.
It's 29 feet to the midpoint of the peaked roof.
So it's important to clarify those things because I think we're measuring off of what's been built and saying, did we allow that before or have we changed?
Wait, what are you saying there to the midpoint?
Yeah. So that's not what I was going to say.
That's a nice eraser. Our current height regulations measure, you've got your house. Measures this point right here. So that is 35 feet. What the cottage regulations are saying is 25 feet to the top of the roof. So it's going to naturally bring it down quite a bit.
So that's why those new ones have released roofs.
So the inside, if you go through the interior of these buildings, the stairway is sometimes narrow, but or steep, rather, but when you get to the second level, it's very much, it has feels like what your grandparents' attic looked like, felt like. You've got the pitches showing up in the ceiling. Mm-hmm. You've got a loft sense of space up there. It's not
probably some dormer
Right. It's not this second level that's a match for the lower level. It's definitely you're in the upper level feeling like you've just redone the attic.
Which, in my mind, fits what I have for cottage.
Right.
But they seem very steep.
The ones that we're seeing?
Yeah.
Well, and now I'm thinking I'm understanding why. The steeper it is, the more you can get out of that average, mm-hmm. right?
Those ranger stations.
Are... Yeah. So they're currently what are those being built at?
29 to the midpoint of the peak roof.
So this brings it down 4 feet.
Much more than 4 feet because it's now to the top of the
roof. Oh, to the top, okay.
And Mike, is there one that's 1,500 square feet? Is that the smallest one there? Is that the, do you know if that's the size? Is it super tiny comparison?
I haven't been out there in a long time to see what's been built.
So I'll just take a look out there.
Okay. So an alternative based on your question would be what?
So I'm just suggesting that this may have already addressed what your concern was about the second floor 50% area rule.
Yep.
But the 50%, like, it guarantees it. Would either one of these conflict with each other? Does it seem like it would?
You could do it either way.
Because what I think Curtis and I are on the thought process of, because if I have a super steep roof, then I could have at least 70 or 80% of my second floor maybe with that steep roof. Mm-hmm. As long as I, maybe instead of 10-foot ceilings, I'm doing 8.5.
Yeah, I think the issue is trying to make them look more like a well-proportioned house than just a...
Yeah, well, this is still doing that. It's actually 18, so it's 25 feet to the peak of the roof for a roof slope of 612 for all parts of the roof above 18 feet. Otherwise, 18 feet is your peak. So it's bringing it to single story unless you're doing a 612 pitch, and then you get up to 25 feet.
What I don't know is, does that provide them that design latitude to have that creative and kind of...
This is, again, based on the Kirkland and Redmond cottage regulations.
So that's what they have.
So
okay.
What you see in those cottage company developments is what this was designing for.
And so in your opinion, then, we don't need to have a restriction on 50% second story?
I don't think so.
Would it still work for the 1,200 square foot? Because theirs was based off of 50.
The height didn't change based on the...
Yeah, the 6 to 12. Would that matter if it's a smaller square footage?
No.
Okay.
All right. So we're leaving that alone?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll leave that.
Okay.
I'm just glad Kirkland had that cottage... Okay,
and we incorporated the credit for the community buildings so that we give an encouragement for people to put community buildings in. So that credit toward open space. That's the next one that was added in. And then this was important, I think, to deal with the, you know, if you remodel or you add square footage, we wanted to allow them to come up to 1,500, not exceed it. And then you had a comment about that, I believe.
Yeah, I just didn't want to limit that if you're in a zone outside of the cottage zone. We wanted that limit within a cottage development itself so it doesn't suddenly not feel like a cottage development. But if you're doing a standalone cottage, for example, in the downtown commercial zone, we shouldn't just limit you to a cottage because single-family homes are allowed. The difference then is you shouldn't get away with the lower impact fees. So
if you build one at 1,500 and you come in, you want to add 1,000 square feet, you're going to pay the
longer impact
fees.
Got it. Yeah. So that's more of a
creative. Because it's not a cottage anymore.
Yeah. So that's the addition I added in there too.
Yeah. It's good catch.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Anybody have anything on 18?
So I have another question for y'all there. Mm-hmm. Number 3. The concern was about the appearance to adjacent properties, and I guess my concern is it's a little bit vague.
so architecturally treated with details similar to the front of the dwelling, that could be a pretty strong requirement, could add substantially to the cost. So I wanted to understand more of what you're talking about. Are you talking about window trim or?
Well, what we were talking about is you're not looking at the back of a building just because it's not facing you. And if you, there was a statement in the original ordinance that said it won't turn its back on other developments. Yeah. Well, it kind of has to if it's going to be facing into a green. So then the issue becomes, do you buffer it well with landscaping, and do you add the, you've seen this over and over again where people come in and they have a great front of the building and they're saving money all the way around it. So is it a trellis? Is it window trim? Is it the overhang of the roof? Is it dormers? Is it something that enlivens the, the outside of it? So you're not looking at the back of something so that it really addresses the rest of the development.
And, you just have a plain door with a cement step instead of a backyard patio with a know, sliding door and trim and a dormer that goes over the top of it.
So the language that protects the concept of keeping the accoutrements of the architecture consistent is what? Does that cover that?
It's really hard. That's one of the things I was worried about, is it's become subjective. And it's nice when you're a reviewer to have concise, precise requirements. But in this case, it might have to be vague because I don't want to have to get into
it. It's not terribly vague because it says must be architecturally treated with details similar to the front of the building.
Yeah.
And we've seen time and time again how people do not treat the other sides of a building, and it just... that's going to turn people off. And this cottage product is supposed to be well appointed, if you will, and unique because it's smaller. So you want it to look, you know, of a very high architectural quality.
Because I saw some cottages up on the ridge that look like shacks, and that's not what
we don't want. That.
So then we want to include language that kind of gives a variety. So this can include
such as
10 things, and so it needs to have
window trim.
We can do that.
Storm trim.
Okay. Yeah.
Covered patio.
Like as I mentioned, a landscape buffer. I would say not a cedar fence fortress, which is adjacent to the church. You know, that's, you can do that, I guess, but you're just walling yourself off. They didn't do it on North Bend Way, it looks like.
Yeah.
Or maybe Cedar Falls, but they did the fortress. So, I don't know. There's other ways you can
describe it. I like that description, though, because it absolutely fits.
Yeah, I like that then, such as window trim, covered patios, wall articulation.
We can give up. Yeah. Shopping list there.
Just dial it in, and it's not cheap, Mike.
Yeah.
Just, this is not cheap.
Start off.
Okay. All right.
We didn't have any redlined on 20, and the change there is just to make sure the CC&Rs deal with the requirements that they should and that we're not requiring it from the park standpoint.
I just want to call out on page 21, make sure everybody read the low density residential and single family when mixed with cottage residential.
So I added in there for developments containing greater than 4 acres, because my thought was we don't want to require standard single family homes on small cottage developments, if that makes sense.
And greater than 4 acres, is that two clusters?
That would wind up being two clusters, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's important to set some parameter, because if you lay this on a small enough site, you're not going to get either of mine, let alone, you know...
So if you're leaving the cottage zone as is, H and I under that can remain. And actually a lot of this can remain then.
Okay.
Under 1811.080 as well. We'll get rid of the figure because I know you were uncomfortable with the figure, but the standard's still talking about low-density residential along Stilson.
8,000 feet, is that the minimum?
Lot size?
Per LDR?
Yeah.
That's not
85.
That's what we passed. That's not what council approved.
Who did approve?
8,000. next year we can work.
I like it.
Well, that's outside of this regulation.
Yeah.
So we have to address that.
So we got rid of the diagram on 22, mm-hmm. and for some, you guys pointed out some very good reasons why we should do that. So I think it makes sense.
Okay.
So all that otherwise, stays. A lot of that stays. Yeah.
Does anybody have anything further before we go to the table?
Where do we end up on square foot?
1,200
in the mix, right?
25% can be up to 1,500.
Thank you.
So you'll see a lot of other regulations that are amended as well that you hadn't seen before. And those are all for consistency with what we're doing with the cottage regulations. So I amended the definitions for cottage, amended the transportation impact fee payment to reflect the new size, changed to the land use performance standards to get rid of those. And I didn't put those in the packet because the packet would just get huge, but I've got those if anybody wants to see what those are. Performance standards that are going away because they got wrapped into these. Likewise, the planned neighborhood district regulations, which got wrapped into this, those are going away wholesale. The 1810.030 amendments, which you see here, those are actually being adopted separately when the city council deals with all of the amendments to 1810.030. You'd previously been reviewing that, and the cottage regulations are wrapped in, but I put the ones addressing cottage in here in pink highlight just so you can see what that looks like. One other amendment that I didn't catch until just today, because the cottage regulations have their fingers in so many different parts of our code, is the zoning district descriptions. So I'm passing that around. There's a couple of amendments that we need to do in that as well. So what that's reflecting is those definitions were specific to when we called out the planned neighborhood district, when we did it different, allowing cottages within an LDR zone in specific developments. It was called a planned neighborhood development, a planned neighborhood district. So we needed to amend the language about that in those zoning descriptions. So that's what you see there.
Why does it say cottage housing for 8 units per acre when we're trying to encourage a cluster of 12?
8 units per acre. You can still do a cluster of 12, but you can't exceed 8 per acre.
I'm just thinking if we can say a cluster of 12 within X space versus... That's all I was just thinking.
It's just because you use the nomenclature of how many units per acre so that people get an idea of what the density is. But, I mean, certainly we want the groups of 12.
Yeah. The groups of 12 is still established in the cottage regulations that you're having to go to when you want to do that.
Site plan.
I'm good.
It just tells you how much land you'll have to have if you're going to do 12.
Yeah.
Are there any other issues?
I think we got through the end of it there. Answers other questions.
Anyone, anything?
I move we approve as draft, or rather amended.
So we have a motion to approve the cottage housing design standards. Is that what we're calling them? Motion by Commissioner Lucky, second by Commissioner Von Trapp.
Reference to 18.11, right? 1811?
1811, yeah, chapter 1811, cottage residential.
And associated amendments.
Yes. Agreed.
Any further discussion? Well, I just want to say thank you, Mike, for the added work. The maps, the radius, and being very thorough.
Are you going to vote on this?
My final thoughts.
You can't talk.
Get ready to go home.
No, that's what we offer. I just want to say to the commission, I thank you for your diligence and your work on this. It's much appreciated. I hope that this gets us those quality communities that not only residents will enjoy, but keep that neighborly feel of North Bend. Anything further? All those in favor of approving Chapter 18.11, Cottage Residential as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved. It is unanimous. Good of the order.
When will the council see what we just did?
We're going to take it to their work study on November 28th,
I think it is, yeah.
A couple of things for good of the order. First, what is the project going on first with all the white pipes?
First? Second Street?
Is that second? Yes.
Yeah, that's the cottage development.
It's cottage development. They just discovered a lot of water.
Apparently.
Yeah. Much more than they thought they'd find.
Yeah.
This is why you don't want to build at this time of the year with a high water table.
Is there a requirement for a sump pump in that basement?
Well, I don't think so. They have some very stringent requirements for vaults to.
That's not the building foundation or basement. Yeah. That's the
stormwater.
So the dewatering during construction and the dealing with stormwater after is a major issue, and that's why I say those issues are the issues that kill you. It's not so much these others.
So that's a stormwater vault.
Yeah. But yeah, that would be a cottage development of 5 cottages around the Common Green, so it would be really exciting to see that.
Yeah.
So
who's doing that?
John Wambaugh, Rivers West Development.
Okay. Have you ever seen engineering that includes structures on top of a vault?
The homes aren't going to be on top of the vault. The vault will sit in the Common Green.
But
oh, have
I seen it done?
I haven't myself.
Because there's an example of it in Kirkland where the marketplace, it's like the Houghton area of Kirkland. There are 2 single-family homes where the foundation is a vault. That's just how they did the site plan.
Vault, a.k.a. tank?
Their house sits above them, a vault, stormwater vault. I don't think it's one of those that's consistently full of water, but it's...
There must be some pretty prescriptive easements that go along with that. Then.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Second question, I thought I read it somewhere. Council, what was the one, Dahlgren?
Mm-hmm.
They chose to do nothing.
No, they're going with 1626. No.
I didn't think so.
The work study was, does anyone on the council feel a need to change from 1626? No? Okay, moving on. It was just that unanimous of a decision, I guess you could say.
I don't know what that means.
Well, they had no... further discussion to change it. There was no thought of what we had done. It was just that's the way they wanted to move forward.
And that was not the agreement they made with Dahlgren's in the beginning.
Correct.
So just, I guess, a process question. Why was he kicking back to us?
That is required whenever you do an emergency ordinance that deals with land use. It has to come through planning commission and then go through the public hearing process.
Checking off a box.
Yep. That's what we're here for. Box checking.
Final question. The results of the election?
After our meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have one. I didn't get a chance to go to the trucking thing where, I guess...
weigh station discussion.
Yeah, the weigh, that's what I was confused about. So a weigh station seemed different than some of the designs I had. I didn't understand if it was a weigh station why you'd need like 35 or 70 stalls. I didn't think...
75 stalls.
I thought you'd be kind of moving through faster than that. Now you said, is it a rest area and weigh station?
So
it says weigh station.
What happens... I was at the beginning part of the meeting. In the traffic lane, there's a monitoring strip, and if a truck goes over and they're in weight compliance, they just keep going. They don't stop. It's only the ones that have an issue or that have some other issue that they need to be pulled over and inspected for will stop there. If they're deemed out of service, then they park there until they can either fix it or remedy it or transfer goods off to limit the weight.
And so you need some stalls for that. The rest of the stalls were something WashDOT put in, and they were not there at the meeting.
Okay, so
but there was a significant discussion on the part of the Highway Patrol saying that people can only drive so many hours. So they're really it's really a stopover place where they it's like a truck stop.
Well, that's
what I was wondering. Well, that, see, they made a big deal out of that. They said you by regulation, you can only drive so many hours. And so, and there was a lot of discussion by the Highway Patrol, and I think they packed the audience with a few truckers that came into it. And so they were saying, you know, we have to have places to rest, and we're not given enough places to rest and all that sort of thing. So the two contingents were, you know, the local folks who have enough truck traffic in town with Truck Town, and you know we're going to get some more in the industrial areas because it's well we've got the Loop project, right, which is the one where the King County is going to be running a lot of trucks through here, and I think a lot of people felt and the council did unanimously that we don't need this additional truck problem here traffic wise because sometimes people try to get around the way stations, of course, and where are they going to go? They're going to be on North Bend Boulevard, right? So a lot of people said, and there's a fairly major school right next to the where they're proposing it. And I think the reason that the staff here was a little chagrined about the whole thing is the way that the state did it. They inflated numbers without anything behind it, and we in a public records request our city administrator got all of that and the banter that went between them, which was clearly to pad the other developments with too much cost and make this look like the low-cost alternative, when in fact there was nothing behind the they had a culvert in it in one of the projects that was $25 million. I mean, what the heck are you building, a fish ladder at Hoover Dam? So, you know, there were some things that just didn't make sense. And I think the way that we felt as a community is that, you know, they have to move it because of 18 and the improvements that are going on down there. So Issaquah said, well, I'll get it out of our face. And so all of a sudden it lands in our backyard and we already have all this truck issue to deal with already. And it isn't exactly consistent with the Middle Fork project that we're working on. So we felt like they were kind of pulling something over on us and padding the numbers and not making it a transparent decision-making process. And so that's why we had the open house, to let people know what was going on. And you're right, your perception is right. They have 75 truck parking places there. This is a truck stop. That's the way it'll operate. And, you know, they have showers and all kinds of stuff there for them. So pretty soon, you just invited that sort of a facility. Now, do you want it? Is that really what you want? And we think there's going to be a lot more traffic taking that southern route as the town develops, as you indicated yourself. There's more development happening down near that. In fact, we're going through some traffic studies right now where we're disputing the separation of routes and where they're going to come and go from, because we know we're going to be impacting some intersections that need to be roundabouts because people are going to go on 90. In fact, if you use Google Maps right now and you want to go to Safeway and you live anywhere down near anywhere in that area that's convenient to the interchange, it tells you to take that because of that huge delay in the F that we have downtown. And a lot of people have learned that and they're going down the freeway to go do those things. So we're going to be impacting that area already with the traffic we're going to get. If we have additional truck traffic, it's going to you know, hit us with a double whammy. So.
Yeah, I think there's some truckers that actually prefer another location, and they've reached out to me, and so I want to
work with them. There's a tidbit. The trucks thing is going to keep coming up until it's done, and this, the energy behind it is bigger than we can probably perceive. But I always think about one thing that kind of drives it. It's the truckers' time on the road, health and safety. But these guys are running on transponders, most of them. Mm-hmm. And when they leave the pickup in Chicago, or they picked up at the port and need to go to Chicago, whatever their route's going to be, they have to schedule that time. And so we're not talking about the individual trucker. We're talking about his payload that's got to go from point to point. That's the real discussion. the fact that they can't get it from the port to a place to park on this route, that means it sits at the port. So whatever that load is, it stops it exponentially. That's why there's so much push from the state, because it's commerce. It has nothing to do with land use that we're thinking about or bugging the neighbors.
But that isn't site-specific. They do need the facility, but where it goes is the question.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything else?
This is such a minor issue, talking about commerce, my God. But I've noticed a very on-site practice developing on Bendigo, just as it makes the corner, the turn, by the sewage treatment plant. I've noticed that the population more and more is taking an illegal U-turn going back towards the library. They'll come in the tail end of the backup. They will just bust ranks, they'll cut around and go through that
right on the arterial turn there.
Right on the turn.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've
wondered
about
that.
We can
fix that by putting up something of a barrier in the road or something that will separate that from being an easy turnaround.
I actually want to ask the police about that, because I've wondered about that myself. Is that an illegal turn? Because it doesn't say no left turn.
It's a double yellow there.
A double yellow line, is that
yeah.
one?
Yeah, okay. Isn't it in the hole through the whole turn?
Okay, so then it would be, yeah.
I think.
So I don't know if Public Works could put some temporary stanchions in there, and then we can put like a proposal together to get something more permanent built and no left turn.
Yeah, that queue is so long that backs up.
Well, that's going to change, right, when that gets fixed.
Yeah.
Someday.
And then isn't it just a regular left turn if nobody's coming?
No.
No.
Because you can't go straight, and you're already in 90 degrees of a turn. You actually have to make a U-turn to get back to the road.
Oh, yes, I know. I take it all the time.
Yeah.
I actually enjoy that option.
Isn't there a double yellow right there?
There is.
That's more the enjoyment, right?
I only take them. There's nobody coming this way, and there's nobody behind me, and I'm not in the back chamber. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for them to sit there and start picking people off. I see it all the time.
I look for that, too.
I see accidents.
Well, the other cut, I'm not sure where the road is. It's an alleyway just before the turn. Take a right.
I kind of watch the city council a lot on television. I can't help but notice. You know, we had a really nice guy who was going to the city council every time. He started going to our meetings. You know, he had a lot of good ideas about land use. I don't know where he went to, but I guess his task was done. He went somewhere else. But now we have another fellow who's coming before the council. He's a well-known, jolly good guy, and he lives in the forest. And so I found his neighborhood, and I said, oh, my God, I know exactly why he's coming. His entire backyard has been cleared for development. Like, that's a quadro project. Now, that was passed and approved long before my time, so it's not on my radar or on my head that it's there. And all of a sudden, I see this clearing. And no wonder he's going to the council. Complaint after complaint after complaint of ideas. Good ideas, by the way. But as a planning commission, I would certainly like to see a working map of all the projects we've approved, where they're being built, what's the status, because they're not in my mind. I don't know, and I was surprised to see that's a huge clearing out there. What is it, 200 homes going to that site?
It's probably close to that, yeah. It's Bar and Cedar Landing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mike, we've gotten away from this. What Dick's talking about is the buildable lands report that we usually get once a month, and then there is the map that I think Mary was getting from Public Works.
Yeah, we update that map maybe twice a year, so we can see if it's updated, getting out to you guys.
Yeah. I think it's really something maybe to include when we're talking about zoning or something or land use in some way.
Yeah, we can make sure that we have that available so that we can put it up on the board when we're doing it. Mm-hmm.
Because there's doubt, no doubt projects that are in some form of process or have a 5-year time frame out in the future. It'd be awfully good to know that. That's what they're talking about. Over time to visualize the future, we can already have a good idea of where our future is going.
Yeah.
But
and some of these things take a long time to germinate and get going because they'll come through and they'll get approved, but a lot of the engineering that has to be done, particularly with a stormwater, it will take a long time. Another thing we've run into is Mike has started keeping track of the appraisals that people are giving us for their park fees. We're finding that there's some wide divergences there, so we're going to look at the code and change it and say, within 6 months of the recording of your plat, we have to have a current appraisal, because they're appraising, we're getting appraisals that are, what, 4 or 3 years old by the time they get to recordation, and this is for us to buy parkland that they didn't provide. So we have to be buying it at the rate at which it's being sold, the price. Mm-hmm. And we had one that was half of the current appraisals that are coming in, so we had to go back to them and say, we need a current appraisal, guys.
Well, let me ask you something. I'm looking at the developer's perspective now, that story. So the guy gives you an appraisal, he starts his application process. It takes so long to get through the application process to get his final vesting. It seemed wrong to me to go back and say, yeah, you've been in the permitting process, and we haven't given you everything you need, and now we're going to charge you more because it's taking so long.
Well, that perspective needs to be debated, because I have people telling that. Let me tell you what happens. I would say 75 to 80% of the time, those delays are due to their lack of responsiveness to things we're required to tell them they have to do. So there's culpability on both sides of that.
All right. As that time progresses, it also is becoming more expensive for the city to buy that. So we're needing to.
Yeah. One of the things we're trying to do is to, I mean, I personally am trying to expedite, once we're past the critical issues, the process, so that one of the things I'm finding is we have some great-looking projects that haven't been built, and once they are built, it might change the attitudes. And I don't want to be the person who's holding it up to hold it up. I mean, once we've gotten past the political issues, we're partners in building community in my book, and we need to get it done. So I'd like to see a little more of that mentality, so that, yes, set the bar high, make them do it right, but once they've done it, let's get something done, built.
Something else forgetting the name of the road. Street, but it's the north-south road, not this road, but the next road down, where it comes up to North Bend Way. Yeah, no, but you're forced to go right now. The new configuration of the plaza has not allowed a left turn, or even straight through. You're being forced to go right, and maybe we should put in a sign, at least to people get used to that. Further up, so they don't get down into that mess and have to go right, because that's where they are. I did a U-turn, totally illegal.
Did you hear me both?
Sometimes you just do stuff. So I just did a U-turn right there, hoping almost to make a left turn into me, and I got away with it. But I didn't know that left turn only was there, or right turn only was there.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
Officer, this does not relate to any confession of any kind.
Yeah.
Wait, so you can't take
some guy knocking on your door and get tickets.
Sure.
No, just right here at Main. So I think that's what we're talking about. Right at the plaza.
Yeah, right at the plaza. Yeah. You approach the plaza and used to be able to just go through there, you know, towards boxes and whatever. Now you're being forced to go right because this has been changed, and that's fine. But you got to know that before you get down there.
Yeah, we need a sign.
Should be a right turn only.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of activity at the hotel property.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
Yes, I think the construction trailer office is there now.
Yeah.
That was an update. Where actually do things stand with that?
Well, you see the oars on the side of the trailer?
I'm
the oars on the side of the trailer?
I've been listening to the engineers, their issues out there with both WSDOT, because the right-of-way frontage they have to construct is within WSDOT's easement area, and they're being terrible about, you can't put any utilities under the pavement. We don't want any utilities under the pavement. So all the utilities are having to be redesigned. And then in addition to that, they have some horrendous stormwater problems. Mm-hmm. And from what I can gather, the consultants that they were using were not getting her done.
and the work that they did, I think there was a lot of money wasted. So you've got brand new engineers getting into it saying, this is a mess, trying to redesign everything. So they thought they were further than they were, but the two showstoppers there that I would have looked at, because I've done hotels before, is if I knew that I would have to go through the State Department of Transportation and that they were going to be reviewing my plans, and then I had that to get over, because you can't get them to move. Local communities you can work with, but you can't work with them. And then the stormwater situation was as dire as it was. It's not a good site. I don't care whether you have a freeway interchange or whatever. It's going to be really tough for them, very expensive.
So why don't we just pull the permit?
Well, I don't think, well, what you're doing is you're allowing them to exhaust their remedies because they have an approval. You know, they're, once you get an approval, you're vested and you have it. But they didn't do very good.
Didn't the permit have a deadline?
It has a...
Can we pull the deadline?
Permit has not been issued.
Yeah.
They've just had received an early clear and grade permit.
Yeah.
So they're still working on engineering for their final clear and grade in their building permit.
Yeah.
But won't whatever goes on there have an impact on the city outside the boundaries of that project? And if so, why are we allowing it?
Well, I think there's a lot of economic development that brings to the city as well.
Yeah.
So
there's another good site just down the street from there that's buildable right across the street from Safeway.
Well, I think the way those things work, though, is either you don't zone for it to begin with, but once you do and somebody comes in and applies and you approve them, unless that particular approval has a shelf life and they're making substantial progress, it's painful to watch sometimes, but sometimes people will trip over themselves for some time before they finally fold their tent. But it's just unfortunate that they didn't get the right site to begin with, and we didn't get a hotel out of it.
That said, their current engineer is much more active than their prior engineer. Their
much.
Prior engineer was
I think it would also be an embarrassment to the city to have to respond to individuals who want to build the city and see that and bring it up as a discussion for why they should build on North Bend. I just think that that's a tough sell. The longer that sits there, the longer we're going to have to explain ourselves to people who want to build in the area. God, why can't we just get it done? Just accept the fact it wasn't private.
We don't control the private end of that, you know. But it's really unfortunate because we need the hospitality services, and it's a good economic shot.
You're darn right we do, David. We more than need it. But that site is not the site to do it.
No. I just can't believe people got this far in it. It just surprises me.
It is the right site from the geographic location, walk into town, on the river, on the trail. That makes good sense. And that would be a higher-end hotel than a motel slash circumstance right on the freeway. So from that perspective, I get why it was there. But I think...
They didn't do their homework before.
The engineering piece just wrong.
Either way, you thought it was buildable.
Yeah.
Really quick, in front of QFC, there is a figure eight design in the works. Are we anywhere in getting funding for it?
You mean the
median?
Ron called it a dog bone.
Yeah.
So the median with the roundabout it and Bendigo there, or not Bendigo.
Park.
Park and Downing.
Downing.
Yeah. That's in... planning, yeah. They're designing that. So we got a grant for that one last year that they're working on the engineering for.
So spring?
I don't know the schedule of it, honestly.
We can find out. You know, if you have questions like that, let us know.
I'm driving my kid to school this week, witnessed another accident there. So he said, Daddy, the airbag blew.
You're supposed to.
What's the groundwork?
It's a really bad area.
Yeah.
I would like to see something change too.
Mm-hmm.
Make my rooms less
tight. Yes. Went out behind this, behind Northland Elementary by the.
That's the BMX park.
That's good. One.
At Tourism Park, we've got the new BMX loop track there.
It's a
great
bicycle competition. So bring your BMX bike out. Go for it.
Well, I'm glad to see they're using heavy equipment this time rather than hands, foot, and shovel like we did last time.
But when are they going to do something with the explosion site?
Well, we hope soon.
Phoenix Plaza.
Yeah, they're really close on their permits, and we're just waiting for them to finish up a couple things.
Yeah, we did. We went through a design review with them and responded right away because we wanted a little. They came in with a kind of architecture that looked like a quilt. You know, I mean, everything was kind of nice on its own, but it was too much. So we had them simplify it a little bit. But I think they're pretty much ready. They're pretty much ready.
How about the restaurant across the street?
Is that the Rusty Roof? Yeah.
These guys changed their design. I don't know that they have enough money to do it because they keep dumbing down their design. That's the last couple of times through what they've done. I'm not processing that one. Is Jamie doing?
Yeah.
Well, what we could do is we'll get the map to you, and we also have a list of active projects. If you like that, we'll give it to you. And if you need any updates on that, it's really important that when people come and talk to you about it, that you know what's going on. So we're happy to share whatever we can with the project updates. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, you got a lumber company going in on, you know, 436.
Yep.
The folks are crying their eyes out about the Dahlgren property. They're gonna. What are they going to think when that one starts going in?
Well, that's not only going to happen, but of course there's a roundabout there, and we're looking at a roundabout. Was it 136 and 436? Because we're finding that is heavily impacted, and we're going to have to put that on our tip right away. So we ought to bring some of the key public works projects and the development projects in and just have them here. And if you wanted to dedicate a meeting to maybe getting somebody from public works in here and having the planners here and just kind of ask your questions, we'd be happy.
Speaking of next meetings, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no meeting for right before Thanksgiving.
So second Tuesday of December.
Yeah, and we'll be bringing you some. I think the next thing will be the tree regulations.
Mm-hmm.
The tree.
Everything that you guys have been asking for, and that the committee has been asking for, I've been saying, let's get
early Christmas
done.
Yeah, you are forbidden from vacation for the month of December because we're going to discuss tree regulation.
Attention
anyway. We'll be discussing them Christmas trees.
I love what you said. Hey, everybody, Iron Duck opens up on November 17th. It's going to be awesome if you've never been to the Black Duck. Mm-hmm. We are. Let's give them a good send-off.
And last night the council approved the Wildflower lease because they would have lost their ABC license, and it would have collapsed this thing. And so they have to be the primary lessee because of ABC. They said they have to be in control of the premises or we won't let them have their license, and it was going to expire the day after the council meeting. Council approved the lease, so it's going through.
Wow. I just went back over my head. You're saying the Jazz joint beside us here?
Yeah, the Wildflower was going in, and they were going to sublease.
Sublease.
But the ABC would not allow them to have a license there unless they were the primary tenant on the lease. So that happened last night. So that. When it comes to moving quickly to save things and make them work, the council's doing a pretty good job. Yeah.
So what did they do? What was the fix?
They approved the lease with Wildflower, and the Jazz group subs to them but has the right to assume the lease at any time if they don't perform or go banco or whatever.
Good stuff.
Motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Say it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned at 9:08.
Very good. Thanks, Dave.
Good work on
you.
That.
Thank you. Mike, can I read this over?
Thank you again, Mike.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
That's right.
Looks like I'm in my head by 400.